I'm John Kroll. We have a treat for you today on No Limits. In just a few days, WFYI-TV will premiere a new documentary, Richard Lugar, Reason's Quiet Warrior. Today on No Limits, we have as our guest the star of the show, former U.S. Senator, former Indianapolis mayor, former Indianapolis school board member, Richard Lugar. We hope you will join this special conversation. You can do so by calling us at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org, find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, or track us down on Twitter at WFYI. Now, this news. Welcome to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We've got a treat for you today on No Limits. We're going to be talking with former U.S. Senator Richard Lugar, also former Indianapolis mayor, former Indianapolis school board member. There is a new documentary about Senator Lugar's life and career that's going to be premiering on WFYI on May 21st at 9 p.m. It is called Richard Lugar, Reason's Quiet Warrior. Full disclosure, I am the writer, narrator, and one of the executive producers for the documentary. Senator Lugar, welcome to the program.
Thank you, John. Great to be with you again.
It's good to have you here. Senator Lugar is talking with us from NPR's fabulous studios in D.C., so I want to thank the folks out there for helping to make this conversation possible. And I also would like to invite our audience to join the conversation by calling us at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org, find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, or track us down on Twitter at WFYI. So, Senator Lugar, before we dive into talking about the documentary, today is primary election day here in Indiana, and three candidates have jousted to become the Republican nominee to occupy the seat that you held for 36 years. It has been a nasty and no-holds-barred primary in which all three of the candidates have called each other just about everything but a child of God. What I guess I'd like to ask, I'm not going to ask you to endorse or pick one of the three, just ask, what counsel would you have for whoever emerges from the voting today? What advice would you offer to either Mike Braun or Luke Messer or Todd Rokita moving forward?
I would hope that the winning candidate would present ideas, a program, at least some constructive thoughts about how jobs are going to come to Indiana and to America, how we are going to conduct foreign policy in a more systematic way by having at least patterns of development in the Middle East or wherever else. We would talk about farmers and the fact that agriculture income has been going down. Smaller farmers have been consolidating rapidly. I hope that the candidates, in other words, will begin to talk about things that are important to the livelihoods and the futures of Hoosier citizens. And I'm really very on a positive note, believing that once they finish this primary, they have that opportunity.
Is it frustrating to you that and this is, I think we can take a nonpartisan position on this, that discussion of ideas occupies so little space in our public discourse these days?
I think that's certainly, unfortunately, true. And a part of the problem comes from the fact that the candidates, in order to win elections, are surrounded by people who have causes, who have particular issues. The amount of money spent in this primary in Indiana today is clearly a historical record, something out of sight. the number of television ads, the amount of space on the television, the number of brochures and other periodical material sent is simply out of sight. So the problem is that the campaign boils down, in many cases, to money, to the organization that is able to pull together the money, or if a candidate has enough money in his or her own pockets and spends it, this is the result.
So I will pivot now and talk about the documentary, which you've seen. There was a premiere on the Franklin College campus about a week ago. And I've always wanted to ask someone this because I'm always on the other side of the equation. I'm the guy asking the questions, and then ultimately I tell the story. What is it like to see your life played out, you know, in this case, on a screen, and interpreted? I mean, is it gratifying? Is it disquieting? What is the kind of response that comes from that?
Well, as I came to Franklin College that night for the showing, I was hosted by President Menar, and he had invited a number of very dear friends, who some of them appear in the documentary. Some give testimony about my life, and all attended the performance. And so already the expectations of what was going to happen on the screen were great. And I thank you, John, for, first of all, originating the whole idea and for organizing it so well with all the people you invited, from my family, from close friends, from people I worked with over the years, some other observers. We all sat down there in the auditorium at Franklin College, and for 1 hour I watched wonderful, wonderful thoughts and testimony. It brought back great memories. Many have been refreshed by watching what people had to say, as well as the material that you have in the film. The whole night was simply overwhelming. Absolutely overwhelming to think that all of that 1 hour about my life was on the screen now, sort of a permanent record that could be played again and again by family members, whoever wanted to play it. And I simply, as the applause came and I rose to try to acknowledge that, I was met with students who were reporters, and right away we were having questions and answers about not only the film, but everything going on in the world. It was just, I say, a night that I shall always remember. And I'm so deeply indebted to you and to Franklin College and the WFYI, who will play the film on the 21st, I understand. Mm-hmm. Great, great opportunities.
Senator, let me ask this. Are you, you know, because it is, among the other things, when you see something like this, you sort of have to, it forces you to reflect on your own past and on your own history. Are you by nature the sort of person who reflects on the past much, or are you the kind of person who likes to look forward, or are you the kind of person who likes to live in the moment?
All three.
All three. That's a difficult balancing act.
Exactly, it is. You just do the best that you can from minute to minute. No, I love to reflect on the past, but my thoughts really are more about the future, about what I can do now at the Luger Center, the think tank that was created with the help of my son, John Luger, who appears in the film and says some wonderful things. Likewise, we're continuing to work with my partner, Senator Sam Nunn, on arms control around the world and problems of mass destruction, with others in food security area. I continue to manage on behalf of our family, our 604 acres there in Marion County, with soybeans and corn, hardwood trees, and I have Bob Luger there, who is helpful on that farm. These are all situations that require forward thinking. What's going to happen to soybean and corn prices this year, for example? Or for that matter, what can I do at the Luger Center with all the creative people that we have around us, former staff members from Foreign Relations Committee and Agriculture Committee, to think about feeding the world, to think about arms control negotiations such as those that are coming up. I did an op-ed with Sam Nunn just a week or so ago, the Washington Post published, in which we brought up cooperative threat reduction, the formula that we offered to the delegates from the Soviet Union when they met with us at the beginning of the non-Luger business.
We are, if you are just joining us, we are talking with former U.S. Senator Richard Lugar. He is talking to us from NPR studios in Washington, D.C. The occasion for the conversation is the upcoming premiere of a new documentary about his life and career called Richard Lugar, Reasons Quiet Warrior, which will premiere on WFYI TV Channel 20 on Monday, May 21st at 9 p.m. If you want to join the conversation, you can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi. Track us down on Twitter at WFYI, or you can do what a listener named George has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. George, you're on the air.
Hey, Senator Lugar, you know me as Mike Bell. I used to live next to you. Can you hear me? Senator Lugar?
Senator Lugar, are you able to hear the caller?
No.
You can't hear the caller. Okay, I will try to relay this real quickly. George, if you'll ask your question, I know that you used to live next to him and that he would know you as Mike Bell.
Right.
What would your question be?
I just wanted to say hi to him, and I think I just really appreciated what he's done as far as with Sam Nunn and trying to disarm the Soviet Union. And I remember I was his paper boy, and I used to see him drive off in his blue Falcon off to work in the morning. And then when he won the mayorship, I wrote him a note, and he said it was the first note he got, but it was a late night. Anyway, I just wanted to call him and tell him thanks.
Will do. I'll relay that. Thank you very much for the call and the question.
Wonderful to hear Mike's voice. And
yes.
I thank you, Mike, for remembering me. I appreciate very much that note way, way back and the encouragement you gave me.
So it's and I should mention, too, that what George/Mike alluded to, your historic partnership, friendship with Sam Nunn is an important part of the documentary. Could you talk a little bit about how really that relationship developed?
It developed because President Reagan asked about 15 senators to go to Geneva, Switzerland for arms control talks with the former Soviet Union in 1986. He was optimistic that finally we were going to make headway, and he wanted a bipartisan group of senators because he knew he needed a two-thirds vote if a treaty was to pass the Senate. Unfortunately, 1986 was not to be the year. The talks broke down fairly rapidly, but on that occasion, I really got to know Sam Nunn well. We visited with a number of Russians over at their consul and elsewhere, and this led to visits to Russia with Sam and me, visiting with these Russians plus others that we were meeting over the next 5 years or so. To cut the story short, a group of Russians, many of them not old friends but people we had met, came to Sam Nunn's office around a table. They said, and at least one of the ladies looked at me straight in the eye and said, "You've got a lot of trouble." I said, "What do you mean?" She says, "The nuclear weapons that are aimed at you are not guarded in many cases. The Russian troops have deserted because they're not getting paid. The problems are that after 40 years of mutually assured destruction, there could be mistakes, there could be errors, there could be terrorists." I said, "What do you need from us?" She said, "A lot of your money, because we're bankrupt. And secondly, technicians to take down the weapons. And thirdly, you may need your troops if things get out of hand because the Soviet Union is collapsing," which indeed it did about 4 months after that conference. Now, that was the beginning of the Nunn-Lugar Act, money that was spent in the former Soviet Union, American taxpayer money, with American experts going in with the cooperation of the Russians, mutually cooperation, to really take down the weapons that were aimed at us. There were at that time 8,000 to 10,000 warheads, all of them larger than those that blasted Hiroshima and Nagasaki in Japan at the end of World War II. One or two of those could have wiped out the city of Indianapolis. I was totally unaware of that as a young mayor of Indianapolis, that we were under that kind of fire. And I found out, just to satisfy my own curiosity, that indeed we were a target. We could have been annihilated.
Senator Ruger, I'm going to have to step in. We have to take a short break right now, but I want to continue the story and talk about your relationship with Senator Nunn when we come back. We're talking with former U.S. Senator Richard Lugar today on No Limits. I'm John Kroll. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We are talking today with former U.S. Senator Richard Lugar. Senator Lugar is the subject of a new documentary that will air on WFYI-TV, Channel 20, on Monday, May 21st at 9 p.m., called Richard Lugar, Reasons Quiet Warrior. Full disclosure, I am the writer, the narrator, and one of the executive producers of the documentary. If you want to join this conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, or track us down on Twitter at wfyi. Senator Lugar, before we had to go to the break and the realities of sort of radio scheduling intruded there, you're in the middle of telling us about basically how you and Sam Nunn helped keep the world from blowing up. And I wanted to make sure that we got to finish the story.
Well, we had opportunities then with our own American troops and our own American technicians to literally disarm the former Soviet Union. It broke up into pieces. We were in Russia, in Kazakhstan, in Ukraine, in Belarus. In essence, all over the place, over the course of about 20 years, it took to get things down to 1,550 warheads each, which the United States and Russia decided would be the New START treaty, and there's been no progress to disarm further from that point. But it changed, I believe, the world, because we were in a situation of a country that was breaking up, that was bankrupt, that had potential for terrorists to take over these weapons, and the horrors that would come from that would have been awesome.
In the documentary, we explore the partnership you had with Senator Nunn, and I cannot think of a parallel in American history of another partnership quite like that. I want to ask about in Senator Nunn's telling, it started out as, for lack of a better term, kind of a marriage of convenience. You both realized, it seems like, if not exactly pretty close to simultaneously, that this country confronted a huge threat that had to be dealt with. And neither one of you had the resources, all by himself or his party didn't, to meet that threat. And you had to find a way to collaborate. But it evolved into something else over time, into more than simply an arrangement. I mean, the two of you became quite close friends, and have, it's clear, he's got, when I talk with him, that he's got absolute trust and respect for you, and tremendous reservoirs of affection. And I can tell the same when I talk with you about him. Can you talk about how, at what point along the way that transformed from, as I say, kind of a partnership of convenience into the deep, deep bond that it is now?
I suspect that occurred because not only did we think about the policies involved and the pragmatic ways of making changes. But we got to know each other well. We traveled together throughout not only the Soviet Union, but elsewhere in the world. When Sam left the Senate and formed the Nuclear Threat Initiative Group, I was one of the original board members and have attended all of the board meetings. And Sam has pulled together in that group Russians, people from China, likewise other countries that have some nuclear weapons. We meet regularly in Washington, so we are still close together in that respect. But I think that on other issues, Sam and I found a bipartisan relationship in which he had ideas as a leader in the Democratic Party, chairman of the Armed Services Committee when Democrats were in authority. I was chairman of Foreign Relations when Republicans had the majority. And we realized that we had ideas that, if not the same, could grow together, that we were prepared to study together, prepared to bring together other people who would inform both of us, and at the same time to then use whatever political skills we had to put together the majorities that were necessary. To get going on Nunn-Lugar for 20 years meant an appropriation bill, a spending bill in the Congress every year to get the money that was required. One year, I recall, so many amendments were added by those who didn't like the program that we never got money spent because all the amendments blocked it. But aside from that situation, it did require a great deal of trust, but growing together likewise, informing each other of new things that we found. And it's a friendship that I certainly treasure. And Sam's words in the documentary mean a lot to me.
So in the documentary, and I'm not going to spoil this because we want people to watch it, he tells a funny story about one of your visits to Russia a visit really to some labs where they were studying botulism and all sorts of other really horrible things. I probably ought to give you a chance to square things a little bit. Can you tell us a funny story about Sam Nunn?
I can't recall that particular story. I remember a story of comparable significance when I first took Barack Obama to Russia. It was the first year in the Senate, and he wanted to go with me. We went to one of these biological labs, and they told Barack that he could see some of the material or whatever was forming there. And he noticed that I was not prepared, really. And I said, Barack, he says, I've been there, done that. You go ahead if you want to, but nevertheless, we both saw all sorts of extraordinary ways in which people have devised methods of killing each other and doing so in mass.
We are talking with former U.S. Senator Richard Lugar today on No Limits. If you want to join the conversation, you can call us at 866-476-3881. You can find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI. You can track us down on Twitter at WFYI. Or you can do what a listener named Douglas has done and send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Douglas writes, I don't know if Senator Lugar remembers working with our former pastor, Reverend Dr. Archie Andrews, and Mount Zion Baptist Church. When Senator Lugar was a mayor, he helped us secure financing for the church. Do you recall that?
Yes, I do. And it was a wonderful experience to be involved with that church and with the great people that founded it.
So let me ask, because you've been in public service now in various capacities for a significant slice of modern America and the modern world's history now, can I get you to reflect on the lessons you learned from each of those stages, starting with your election to the school board, Indianapolis School Board, in the mid-1960s, which was a time of upheaval. What was the most profound lesson you took away from that service?
I came onto the school board at a time in which there was potential for racial strife in Indianapolis. I worked with Gertrude Page, an African-American lady whose husband, Horace, had a coal dealership. He'd passed away, and we were determined to attempt to desegregate the public schools of Indianapolis. which had been segregated since the days of the Ku Klux Klan. We were partially successful with the so-called Short Reach Plan, which allowed students wherever they lived in Indianapolis to come to Short Reach in the freshman year for college preparatory studies. And Short Reach, which at that time was 95% African American, the new percentage with regard to the entry were 50% African American, 50% Caucasian the first year. It was almost too good to be true, and members of the school board objected to our dealing with what they called sociology as opposed to education. But it was a very important time in my life, an important time in the life of the city, because other cities were becoming torn by racial strife. In Indianapolis, we were trying to think constructively about how we could mitigate that and really look for a new chapter.
And then moving forward, what do you think the most profound lesson about leadership, about life, about anything that you took away from your 8 years as mayor of Indianapolis?
I was elated with the possibilities of seeing Indianapolis develop into one of the great cities of America. And without going into all the details, the Unigov legislation that had to pass the Indiana legislature to bring about a new constitutional form, really, for Indianapolis, with one mayor, one council, all the money on the table for not only the inner city, but the entire county. Unigov elevated Indianapolis to the top 10 cities in the country population-wise, but more importantly, it brought huge amounts of new investment. Hotels started getting built in downtown Indianapolis, thousands of jobs in the tourism and hotel industry, in addition to other industries. We were rediscovered as crossroads of America, as people found Indianapolis as the ideal place, really, to situate their logistics situation. I had an opportunity to invite all the mayors of the world to come to Indianapolis for what I call the first International Conference of Cities, and about 50 did. And we became an international outpost of people deeply interested in what was going on in America and finding in Indianapolis a group of people who were moving together. While in various cities, in Detroit and Cleveland, Buffalo, St. Louis, and what have you, racial strife and division was to create even greater hazards, some of which are still there. It was a wonderful opportunity for 8 years to work with so many people who were highly motivated to make certain that we had not only a great present, but a great future. And it lives on, and I really am indebted to all the mayors that followed me, because none of them tried to reverse anything we did. As a matter of fact, when we had a conference of mayors not too long ago, all five of us knew how we supported each other historically and how the building at least went up story by story.
And then moving on to the U.S. Senate, what was the most profound lesson you learned from your 36 years there?
Well, there were two great moments. One was the Freedom to Farm Act. As chairman of the Agriculture Committee, I remembered my dad was very, very upset during the Franklin Roosevelt administration when he was limited in how many acres of corn or soybeans or wheat he could plant. And in Freedom to Farm, we liberated farmers in America to make their own decisions on how much they wanted to plant or which animals they wanted on their farms. And then it was Freedom to Farm. I worked with Senator Roberts of Kansas, who is still in the Senate. He was in the House at that time. And then, of course, with Sam Nunn, the Nunn-Lugar Cooperative Threat Reduction Act dealt with a foreign policy question that was really truly profound. I had all sorts of opportunities to work on treaties that I think made a difference. And it's too long a list to go through it today, but it was a situation in which I found bipartisan majorities and tried to develop those, because you needed a two-thirds vote for every treaty. But we passed treaties in those days. And treaties are not even being considered these days, but they were in the old time, and hopefully that'll happen again.
We are talking with former U.S. Senator Richard Lugar, former Indianapolis mayor, former Indianapolis school board member, in anticipation of the broadcast of a new documentary about his life and career called Richard Lugar, Reason's Quiet Warrior. If you want to join the conversation, you can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI. Track us down on Twitter at WFYI. or do what Dennis has done and call us at 866-476-3881. Dennis, you're on the air.
Well, thank you, John.
Certainly.
Thank you, Senator Lugar, for taking my call. We have met a few times, and I'm glad to speak with you now. I have been observing the current race in the primary for the Republican candidate to be the nominee for the Senate seat. And I am aware that they seem to be arguing who is the most Trumpian. They all are chastising one another for not having been on board early enough, and some claim to have been there at the very beginning. And so my question is, do you think it is helpful for people in the party to be pledging allegiance to their leader, in this case, President Trump? Or do you have any thoughts about like the liberty of democracy such that people can be more critical of their leader while campaigning and acting as a senator? Please reflect on this issue for me.
Thank you very much for the call and the question, Dennis. Were you able to hear that, Senator Lugar?
Yes.
Good.
Yes, I was.
Good.
I respond to Dennis as a practical matter in terms of a political campaign. The Republican candidates obviously are going to be asked about the President of the United States and about other Republicans, and they usually are going to react with diplomacy. But at the same time, my hope would be that they would have some ideas of their own, that they would be thinking about Indiana and about what actually will further the hopes of Hoosiers, as well as thinking about the United States and our position in the world. We are in some very, very difficult situations right now in which the president is involved, but so are all of us. Right today, I suspect, something about the Iran deal, arms control with Iran. Very shortly, we may be dealing with North Korea and nuclear arms there. We have, for the time being, gotten out of the Paris Agreement. So we're not dealing with climate change with other people. We've gotten out of the TPP treaty in the Pacific, so we're not dealing with all the nations of the world that might be helpful in free trade there. And the whole problem on our own continent, dealing with Canada and Mexico, is certainly up for grabs. These are all areas that need to be addressed by candidates for the Senate because they could be leaders in bringing about new formulations, new legislation or new treaties, as the case may be. And so I'm hopeful that they may take more of that tack as the time goes on. I would just say in defense of the candidates that they are under the problem of money, the problem of huge sums of money that are in this campaign that create negative ads day in and day out. And that is a barrage that is very hard to fight. And that makes it difficult. Even while I'm giving advice to talk about constructive things, they're talking about survival and somehow making it to the next lap.
Is it possible? You know, right now it seems like we live in this perpetual campaign state. Is it possible for us to govern?
Of course it's possible for us to govern. And I give credit, for example, I think our governor is doing a very good job. It's very stable relationship he's established with leadership around the state and with the state legislature. I think Mayor Hogsett in Indianapolis is doing a good job, and we're trying to work with the city county council as he should. There are a number of people who are demonstrating with new ideas and constructive ideas that they are listening to the people and that they're trying to solve those problems.
If you are just joining us, we are talking with former United States Senator Richard Lugar. He's also a former Indianapolis mayor, former Indianapolis school board member. WFYI-TV is going to be broadcasting the premiere of a new documentary about Senator Lugar's life and career. It is called Richard Lugar, Reason's Quiet Warrior, and it will air on WFYI-TV Monday, May 21st at 9 p.m. If you want to join this conversation, please call us at 866-476-3881, send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We are talking today with former U.S. Senator Richard Lugar in anticipation of the broadcast of a new documentary about his life. Richard Lugar, Reason's Quiet Warrior, which will air on WFYI-TV on Monday, May 21st at 9 p.m. Full disclosure, I'm the writer, narrator, and one of the executive producers for the documentary. If you want to join this conversation, you can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi. You can track us down on Twitter at WFYI. Or you can do what a listener named Steve has done and call us at 866-476-3881. Steve, you're on the air.
Yes, how are you today?
Doing well. What's on your mind?
Well, I first met Senator Lugar when he came to Chartrand High School in either 1968 or 69, which Chartrand became Roncalli High School, so it's been a long time, but I appreciate the fact that as the mayor of Indianapolis and as our senator, Senator Lugar always did what was best for the people in his district, his state, his country, no matter whether they voted for him or not. He took care of everybody, and that's in really short supply right now.
Thanks very much for the call and for sharing the story and the comment, Steve. So that's got to be gratifying to hear, Senator Lugar.
It is, and I thank Steve for his call and for his wonderful words of encouragement.
So I want to ask, because that's a point that comes out in the documentary, too. You know, there are, obviously, you are a Republican and have been a Republican for all your life, but there are moments when you stood apart from or perhaps challenged your party to think again. What was, would you say, the true north on your moral compass? What were the standards by which you judged yourself and your conduct, or where you had to make stands?
Well, I simply tried to think each day of what was the truth, what was the guiding influence of the Lord in my life, and what responses I should have or what new initiatives. In other words, I was guided, first of all, by two wonderful parents, Marvin and Bertha Lugar. I was a part of Methodist Youth Fellowship, attended Sunday school and church all the time. I remember going out to DePauw to give a speech, an oratorical contest, and it was about religion. And coming back, my dad simply stopped and said, "Now, Dick, I hope you really believe everything you said today." Very sobering advice from your dad. But this led to a youth that did not involve smoking, did not involve drinking, did not involve sex, did not involve difficulties of this sort, and largely it came about because I tried to think through, really, each day who I was, what I was doing, what was the right thing to do, and how I could be loyal and at the same time offer good advice and counsel wherever it was required. And I appreciated so much in my youth the Boy Scouts of America. I advanced the Eagle Scouts, and my sons and my grandsons have been involved in scouting, because that offers a very good framework for that with other young men, as well as guides as parents. I appreciated the opportunity to be a guest speaker in the Methodist Church many times around the state, and thinking through at least what I was going to say, trying to make sure that my own life and convictions were on track with that. So sometimes this leads to some discomfort, I suspect, with other people who have different views or different outlook on life, but at the same time, I've enjoyed respect from almost all of them at some point, and I'm grateful for that.
We've gotten an email from a listener named Sean, and again, our email address is nolimits@wfyi.org. Sean writes, "Hello, Senator Lugar. What are your thoughts about the amount of hate rhetoric within the Republican Party, especially the amount within the younger generation? It seems to be going from them and going up to the older generation, unlike the way these things traditionally started from the older generation down. What should the party do, and what should we as a country do to get back to the more rational Republicans classic? And finally, what do you think Reagan would think about the party as it exists now? I ask because I really have been struck by the amount and level of hate campaign commercials this year. Thank you for being one of the good ones, Sean."
Well, thank you, Sean, for your compliment. I would say simply that President Reagan was my favorite among presidents with whom I had the privilege of working because he was really on a constructive path in the conversations or the group meetings that we had and things that I was able to do for him. I would say that it is a time in which, as we discussed earlier today, the amount of television and radio advertising is really astonishing. And unfortunately, some campaigns really become campaigns of dislike or hate or antagonism or negatives. That's too bad. I'm very hopeful that people who are doing that kind of work in campaigns will get over it. At the same time, I have some sympathy for their situations because they are being hit by millions of dollars of hate ads, or very negative ads at least. It's very difficult to know how to defend yourself or what to do in those circumstances. I remember in campaigns, because I always tried to keep my campaign commercials and rhetoric constructive, but other senators who were on the Republican Senatorial Committee, for example, the committee responsible for getting majorities, said, "You've really got to sock it to them. You've got to really go after them. You can't just be all this nicety all the time. That just doesn't work in politics." And sometimes they're right in that respect. And so I have sympathy for the current candidates, but same time hope, as I'm sure Sean does, that we'll have another day.
I've heard this a lot because, you know, in one way or another, I've observed your life and career, and this has become, for a long time now, this has become kind of a persistent theme. You know, when I've seen you in public settings or whatever, someone almost inevitably asks you that kind of question. You know, how can we get back to an atmosphere in which you know, people disagree, but they disagree with an understanding that there's more that kind of ties them together than separates them. I guess what and they see you really as the symbol of, and really kind of the embodiment of that sort of spirit. The first part of that, I guess, would be is it possible for us to go back, and were the times that they're looking back to really as rosy as we like to think they were?
Well, many of the times in the past were not rosy at all. Mm-hmm. We had a civil war in this country. We had things that were less catastrophic than that. But at the same time, just to make your point, I recall at least a wonderful experience I had a few months ago. I mentioned Mayor Joe Hogsett, who was a Democrat, been a long-time politician in our state, now the mayor. And it was a great surprise when he called me to ask me to come to Indianapolis to visit with him, to have lunch with him, and then to take part in a ceremony in which they would announce that the area in front of the city-county building in Indianapolis would be named the Lugar Plaza. And he invited dear friends from way, way back, from both parties, and all sorts of folks, many I had not seen, to come to the 25th floor of the city-county building to celebrate this situation. And this included former Democratic mayors as well as Republican mayors and councilmen and people involved in politics and folks involved in all sorts of sectors of life and religion and business and so forth and family members. It was a great experience. And the lunch I had with Joe before the dedication was a great conversation about politics now, about Indianapolis, about the constructive things that must occur if we're going to continue to advance as a great city. So I cite that as a positive example of things that are occurring now that ought to be celebrated.
We have gotten another email from a listener named Kenny, and again, our email address is nolimits@wfyi.org. Kenny writes, Senator Lugar, it is a cosmic-level mistake for you, President Obama, and all global experts in nuclear matters to have allowed Donald Trump and his ilk to misrepresent the Iran nuclear agreement as a political disagreement. You better than most know the Iran agreement was carefully structured by the most accomplished nuclear engineers, scientists, and diplomats from the United States, EU, Russia, China, and other nuclear powers who are otherwise adversarial. It is a triumph. Trump has dangerously but successfully dumbed it down as a political fail for the most ignorant elements of America. Please comment.
Well, I would say simply that I agree that the Iran deal was very important, and I supported it very strongly. I wrote several op-eds with my partner Sam Nunn that were published at that time, attempting to persuade people in various cities around the country to support the Iran deal. I have continued to do so, and I have criticized President Trump's attitude with regard to this as an idea that's not constructive at all. As a matter of fact, it was very important that the Iran nuclear program be at least postponed for 10 years. We got most of the nuclear material out of the country, so it was much less dangerous. It's not a perfect deal, but it was a remarkable achievement. And so I would say that we need to speak up, and I have on that respect, as I have with regard to, in this program, climate change, the Paris Agreement, or the TPP agreement in the Pacific with regard to trade, so that we take charge and lead rather than China in that particular area, or our agreements with Mexico and Canada close by. These are very constructive proposals that have occurred, that have worked in the past, and we need to support them.
We are talking with former U.S. Senator Richard Lugar here on No Limits today. If you want to join the conversation, you can do what a listener named Sandy has done and call us at 866-476-3881. Sandy, you're on the air.
Good afternoon. I first met you, Senator Lugar, when I was a high school student at Shortridge High School back in the 60s, and I helped you campaign for running for the school board. And I've always admired you. Both of my parents were, well, one was a Democrat and one was a Republican, but one always, they both always voted for you, and they both always voted for Andy Jacobs. Today, that seems less to happen less and less. Is there any Democratic candidate that you would ever find yourself endorsing or helping in their campaign or any of those kinds of activities in today's climate?
Thanks very much for the call, Sandy.
Well, Sandy, it's conceivable, but I'm not going to, on this primary day, really get into any endorsements. I hope you will forgive me, but I've mentioned during this program several Democrat leaders that I think have done a good job or doing a good job. I would not necessarily have voted for them and supported them, but I do respect at least the work they're doing, and I admire that and have said so.
When you look out across the country right now, are there people that you think are trying to provide the kind of leadership that you did, and, you know, was more focused on bringing people together to meet common problems rather than, you know, creating wedge issues so that one party or the other can pick up the larger half?
At our think tank now, which is called the Lugar Center, we have the Bipartisan Index, along with the McCourt School at Georgetown that does much of the statistical work. We are rating all the senators from 1 to 100 and the members of the House from 1 to 435 on the basis of who offers legislation that obtains support from anybody on the other side of the aisle. Or on the other side of the aisle, if you reach over, you get credit for that. This is the fourth year we've done this. The leader this year in the Senate is Senator Susan Collins of Maine. I believe she is a remarkable leader in the Senate, a remarkable example of constructive political leadership in America. Likewise, Rob Portman in Ohio rates very high. It's interesting that in Indiana, both Todd Young and Joe Donnelly, our two senators, are in the top 10. They're the best pair, at least in the country, in terms of bipartisanship and reaching across to do constructive things. So these are encouraging steps, and we're attempting to give encouragement by giving publicity all over the country. Since the index came out just a couple of weeks ago, I've been reading publicity and stories about these persons. All over the country, people are sort of taking hold of the fact that their member does things well, gets things done, can really reach out and can listen. And so we will continue to work very strongly on this bipartisan index.
We've only got about 90 seconds left here, so I'm going to ask kind of a summing up question. Over your long career, when you look back, what is the thing or, you know, the theme of your career that gives you the most satisfaction?
The theme of my career is that we were able to achieve results. We had ideas, ideals, but at the same time, we were able to work with others who either shared them or were persuaded. And that was very, very important to me and continues to be important.
Well, I'm going to do something that sort of breaks practice and protocol here, and I would beg my audience's indulgence and yours as well, Senator. But I feel I would be remiss if I didn't conclude this program not just by thanking you for the many years of distinguished and meritorious service you have offered to our city, our state, our country, and the world, but particularly I want to thank you and your staff for the incredible generosity and openness you showed me, my colleagues, and my students who were working with us on this documentary as we told your story. And I want to let you know and let the people who work with you know how incredibly grateful I am for that.
Thank you, John. I'm incredibly grateful to you, and I appreciate all that you've done.
Thank you very much, Senator. We look forward to talking with you again. The documentary will air on WFYI-TV on May 21st at 9 p.m. That's a Monday. I am John Kroll. You've been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Producers, Sarah Neal Estes, Roxana Caldwell, and Jill Sheridan. Interactive Media Coordinator, Scott McAllister. Technical Producers, Cedric Freeman and Chris Flood. And Board Engineer, Joe Hatcher. Emily Matheny screens our calls. No Limits is made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.